Welcome to the Therapy Untangled podcast. My name is Stephanie Essenfeld, and I've dedicated myself to the study of psychology and relationships during the last 10 years. I use my Instagram account, Therapy Untangled, to offer different tools, perspectives, and motivate others who don't have access to therapy or who want to use this learning space in addition to their own therapy experience and grow. This podcast was born after many requests of having my Instagram live conversations being available for longer than 24 hours. So I've turned them into podcasts, and now you can have access to them all the time. I hope you enjoy these conversations as much as I did. The journey to get yourself and your life untangled starts now.
Just want to make sure I'm not missing her because you guys are connecting super. Acting super fast, and I have to invite her. So I want you to tell me, where are you guys from? You know, where are you hearing us from? Would love to, there it is. Massachusetts, San Francisco, Bolivia, Dominican Republic, Philadelphia, Australia. Wow, this is amazing. Hi, Sylvie.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited. Have I been late? Because I was looking for the last time, but
yes,
I wasn't
I was
seeing it.
For my babies to sleep. They were crying.
Okay. No problem at all. Oh,
a lot of guilt.
No worries. Healthy guilt. Healthy guilt.
Healthy guilt.
Yay.
Yeah, my husband's taking care of it, but
oh,
it was hard.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing really good. I'm really excited. This is such a great topic. And of course, just connecting with you finally face to face. I'm really excited about that.
Yes, very excited. So I see that a lot of people are joining. We're 75 now.
Woo-hoo.
People from all around the world, which I love.
So amazing.
Yes. So I guess we can introduce each other. So I'm Stephanie. I'm from Venezuela. And I'm a marriage and family therapist, and I love helping clients and in mostly in their relationships. So I see a lot of couples, which I know Sylvie does too. And yeah, so Sylvie.
Cool. Somebody's asking where you're located. Are you in Venezuela now, Stephanie?
No.
Oh, okay. Where are you now?
No, Venezuela is in a crisis right now. One of the worst crises. Ever. I'm in Miami. I've been living here for 11 years now.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, I'm a Los Angeles girl. I also have a similar background. I have my bachelor's in sociology, my master's in psychology, also in marriage and family therapy, similar to Stephanie. And right now I'm focusing more on coaching clients and really working with boundaries and relationship-oriented topics, which I absolutely love. So I'm just so excited for our conversation to see where it's going to go. Yay.
Me too. So we're talking today about shame versus guilt. For me, I don't know about you, but for me, it was a huge aha moment and awakening when I learned about the differences between these two. And when I was able to change my inner dialogue and help my clients change their inner dialogue about and identify when is it that's shame and when it's guilt that it's talking in your head, and how can you convert it to healthy guilt? Tell me more about how do you see this topic, because
such a big one, and
it's a huge one.
It's huge, and it sometimes can feel very similar in some ways, but I think the biggest distinction, you know, between shame and guilt is shame is I am bad, and guilt is I did something bad. So it's, in a way, guilt is being able to take the focus off of ourselves and being able to really empathize and see the perspective of others, whereas shame can be such a debilitating emotion where we get so stuck on feeling unlovable, unworthy, and not only does it become toxic in ourselves to not be regulated, but that we end up not being present for our partner, our friend, a family member, and so it just becomes a really downward spiraling down emotion, which is really, really hard to be with. Yeah.
100, I agree with you. I feel like guilt for me, another aha moment was when I realized that guilt focuses on our behavior. Like, what is it that we did what was our behavior that doesn't go in line with our values. Mm. Shame is all about us. It feels that we're bad, like we're imperfect, we're unworthy of love and belonging. And that's a huge difference. So what do you think is the inner dialogue? Mm. Like, what are those messages that goes on in our head? And how can we identify that it's actually shame that's talking and not guilt?
Mm. That's a great question. Can I get a little nerdy with this stuff?
Please do.
Well, I think it's really helpful to understand how, you know, shame really originates, because I think that, first of all, we all feel shame, all of us. You know, my therapist made a great example in our group once, and she said, you know that feeling when you're trying to say hi, you think you see someone you know and you're trying to say hi, and then you realize it's not them, and then you're just like, automatically your body goes into like this, oh no, this embarrassed feeling. That's shame. And so even something as small as that can trigger us. So it's not the emotion of shame that we want to just automatically remove. The problem that starts to happen is when we struggle to regulate it. And so when we're young, when we're about 12 months, that's when our shame starts to come online. That's when we start to developmentally start taking risks as a baby. You probably, you know, are very familiar with this. And when, you know, mom or whoever's taking care of us starts to recognize, oh my gosh, my baby is thinking that they're just like me, that they can do all these great things, and I have to stop them. I have to say no. I have to start setting boundaries now. And so when the moms, or again, I want to be mindful, whoever is the caregiver is starting to set those boundaries, then the child will feel shame when they hear no, because they're so excited. They think they can take on the world. And then the baby's just, you know, in that shame emotion. And if the parent is not doing a good job of then comforting and regulating that child, then the child doesn't develop that ability to regulate themselves. So I think that's a really important distinction, because we all feel guilt and we all feel shame, but it's when we don't have that ability to kind of manage it and bring it down that becomes a problem. And you ask the question of, what does that inner dialogue look like? I'm bad. I'm a mistake. You said I'm unlovable. I'm unworthy of connection.
There's another one.
You know?
I have to apologize for who I am. Mm. Instead, I have to apologize for my behavior. Mm. That's a huge one.
That's
and what
huge.
You say, and I love the example that you gave about parenting and the messages that we give our children, because I feel, yeah, it's the whole, you're being bad, so now I'm not going to talk to you, and you're going to go to timeout, and you're going to be there for X amount of time, and even when you come out, I'm really going to make you feel bad about what you did.
Yeah, that takes it even to a deeper level of now we're shaming the child. They already feel the shame, but now we're taking it even further, and we're just exasperating the emotion that they have.
Yeah, and it's huge, because as parents, we really think that we're doing it correctly. Like, we feel that this whole event of shaming, which we don't even see it as shaming, because if we would, we wouldn't do it, but it is a shaming act. We see it as discipline. But we don't understand the messages that we're sending this child, and the messages that are being internalized.
Totally.
And how they're being right now, they're growing up with these messages, because it's not only once, it's constantly. Every time I do something wrong, which most probably wasn't even on purpose, because I'm exploring the world and understanding the world, I'm being sent this huge message that I'm wrong as a person.
Yeah. Well, and it just gives us that message, like you said, that we can't make mistakes, that we are our mistakes. The parent becomes so identified and fixated on what we did that was quote unquote wrong, that they can't go to the comforting part, helping us realize, hey, you can make mistakes and I still love you. You can break the rules and I'm still here. I'm still going to be available. And then, you know, it really robs us, and we build defenses, you know, we build defenses that cover up so we don't ever feel shame. We become perfectionists, or we access our rage so we don't have to drop into that intense shame emotion. And of course, you know, if we're in a relationship, we're never going to want to take responsibility for our mistakes then, right? If we struggle with shame.
Yeah, the other day I was writing a post about the way we prove or unprove or disprove shame. Mm. So I wrote that when we prove shame, we engage in addictions or compulsions or substance abuse or breaking the law because we feel that we're inherently bad and that's who we are and there's nothing we can do about it because this is who I am. So there's nothing more to me. Like, why would I expect anything more of me? Or why would anyone expect anything more of me? This is my role. I am bad. But when we disprove shame because of the discipline, because of the high expectations of our parents, then we become driven to success, like really trying to impress people. We become control freaks, or however you want to say it, this need for control and perfectionism, like really responsible because we really, really want to disprove shame. And for me, like one of the most amazing things and themes, and I'm actually doing a live about it with Whitney, with Sit With Whit, is defensiveness. Like for me, defensiveness says a lot about shame. And when you're able to pause and say, what is it in me that's feeling shame? Like what's going on really deep inside that I feel that I need to cover up for something that I feel that I did wrong. That's when we can actually turn it into healthy guilt and take responsibility instead of like really trying to take the blame out of us.
Totally. Yeah, that's you couldn't have said that any better, that deflection. It's like, what are we doing that's going to stop us from ever having to feel that shame? And the sad reality is, until we give ourselves permission to feel it, we're never going to be able to regulate it. And it's hard because obviously we're not going to just expose our feelings of shame with just anybody. We would never recommend that. You want to do that, you know, in my relationship with my current partner. We've been together for 4 years and I've probably had more shame come up than I've ever had. And I had no idea that that was something that I struggled with. Not at all.
100%.
I'm like, what is this feeling? I feel like a toddler all over again. You know, I feel like I'm 3 years old. And that feeling of just being so consumed and disoriented. But I realized, I'm like, if I don't allow, and of course, a lot of therapy helped, of course, to let myself go there. But the emotion, I would have to turn to him and ask him, can you please, you know, hold me? Can you just be with me? And until I had that ability to be comforted by him, I couldn't be there for him. I couldn't. Otherwise, I would, you know, do anything I can to escape the situation that I was in. So it is a really, you know, a tricky thing. And I think just being able to talk about this and labeling what happens really helps people get, gives people permission to know that it's important to feel it, you know, and to ask for that support.
I love what you just said.
The toddler part?
No, I feel like I had the same experience of you. Like I really had no idea like that I felt any shame at all, at all. And when actually for me, it clicked when I saw all the Brené Brown videos. Like she started talking about shame and the feeling that I'm not good enough. And I'm like, what? I don't feel it. And then I started like digging. I'm like, we all feel it. We all feel it. But some of us are able to look at it directly and access it and say, what is this feeling telling me? Like, what's going on in my body? Where did I got this message? What am I really trying to cover up by being this? What's going on? What is driven my actions? And when we're able to say, you know, what is shame? And it's okay, because the issue with shame is that people don't want to admit that they have any feelings of shame. Because admitting that you have any type of shame is, it feels like you're admitting that you somehow aren't enough. If I don't feel enough, then I'm not enough. You know, I need to provide this image of me that tells people that I'm 100% confident and I feel I'm enough. So it goes hand in hand with vulnerability, which I love because you talk a lot about it. And oh my God, your content.
Oh, thank you so much, Steph.
But this willingness to be vulnerable, specifically with your partner, with the person that you choose to spend the rest of your life with, comes from being able to access shame and admit it.
Yeah.
And and talk about it. Where is this coming from? What is it trying to tell me? How can I turn it into healthy guilt? So yeah. How, I'm going to ask you, how to turn it into healthy guilt? Like, tell me a little bit if you have some examples about how can we turn a shame message into healthy guilt?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I can use a situation where me and my partner were having a moment where I'm like, I need to get out of here right now. I was trying to leave an event. And he's like, okay, you know, we'll go in a few minutes. I was like, no, I need to go now. And I felt that feeling of just disoriented. Like, I felt like I was just like, I could not regulate my emotional experience. And I was saying things that were probably hurtful and being really criticizing. And I know when I'm doing that, I'm in a really bad place. And after him helping me calm down, then I'm able to access the guilt. And I think it's important to remember that sometimes we have to do this in a more logical way. It might not connect at first. So it's like, if you're somebody that struggles with shame, just practicing to say the words, I'm sorry, even if you don't feel sorry, but practicing to say the words and then allowing yourself to see what happens to your body after you practice doing that a few times. And then trying to change your dialogue from it being focused to you, about you, to being focused on your partner. So I did a post on this, which is, I think, what we connected on this topic. One of the examples would be toxic shame would look like, God, I'm such a screw up. And healthy guilt would look like, I can see why you feel hurt by me. Shame would be, I don't know how you stay with me. And guilt would be, this feels really hard to feel, but I'm here with you. And so it's really about figuring out even if it's just adding a few words in your dialogue to your partner or to your friend that makes it more about them and really starts to take that focus off. But I really love what you said, because we have to call out the shame piece. I think until we can make some kind of relationship with our shame to start regulating it, it's going to be really challenging to separate our own self from what's happening for somebody else. Is that making sense?
Yes. Yes, it definitely makes sense. I feel like, and this is where courage comes from.
Oh, so much courage.
All run around.
Right. Yes.
But, you know, sometimes what you talked about, triggers. Mm. And I feel triggers are huge. Like, knowing when you get triggered and when you are triggered. Because I feel like the hardest thing is, like, knowing, like, okay, right now I'm being triggered. Mm. Right now I'm feeling defensive. Right now, my emotions are up the roof. Right now, I may not be acting very rationally. So to be able to first understand by, obviously, your sensations, right now, I'm completely immersed in emotional mind. Mm. And stop for a second and think, what can I take responsibility right now for the way I'm acting? Like, what can I say right now to my partner or to my friend or to my boss or whoever you're having an argument with? What part of everything that happened can I take responsibility?
Mm. Beautiful. And so it's not so much about the whole, it's about finding a small piece to connect with.
A small piece. Yeah. And the moment you do that, the moment that the other person, because the fact is that, like you said, everybody feels it. So the other person that you're arguing with is also struggling with their own shame.
Mm, so that's very true.
And a lot of times, and I tell this my clients all the time, that, yeah, you're practicing skills. You're coming to therapy every week and you're practicing amazing skills that are really helping you, but you cannot expect everybody to know those skills. You're going out to the world and you're gonna encounter people from your family or outside your family that don't know these skills. So it is your job to understand, what part are you willing to take on? Like, how can you take that responsibility? And if he wants to speak, he or she or whoever you're talking with wants to take responsibility and engage in this vulnerable conversation and constructive conversation, then great. But you have more probability of that happening if you make that first step instead of letting yourself being driven by your ego.
I love that. Modeling the vulnerability that you want, and maybe sometimes even a few times before the other person catches up with you, you know? Totally. And you said something, and of course my brain just went blank. It'll come back to me.
The skills part?
Gosh, I hate it when that happens. No, it'll come back. But just, you know, even just that piece of taking, I think with shame, we think, because we're so caught up with, I'm the mistake, and it's so over-consuming, it's so consuming, whereas, like what you said, making it practical and just being able to take responsibility for one small part of what happened can soften the other person's defense. But also, again, it becomes an invitation to know that I am able to make a mistake, and that's okay. It's like a proclamation to the universe. And I think it's so important. It's humility. It's exposing shame itself, which is what starts to dissolve it. You know, one of the most connecting moments is when my partner can say, I feel shame. Because then it's like, oh my gosh, there's nowhere to go from here. We're done. You know, it's over. We're connected. We're made the repair. You know?
Yes, I agree. And also that part of saying sorry and showing healthy guilt, it also sets an example for the other person that it's okay if they also admit that they made a mistake, because it's human talking to the other human, and it's fine. But if we're modeling and if we engage in a power battle,
and I never do right. That, by the way, Stefan, never never
of who was right and who was wrong, because the truth is that in very few arguments, one person is entirely right and the other person is entirely wrong. What's happening to my English today? but the moment you're able to do that, to try to connect by saying, yes, I'm human and I made a mistake, let's talk about it. And what you just said, it really hurt me, the behavior, not you, the behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you can definitely become vulnerable with each other and have a conversation.
Totally. And I love that, because first of all, it helps to be with somebody that can help language their frustration with us. But I think, you know, one of the things that really helped me work with my shame, as hard as it was getting the feedback from my partner. You're being really critical right now. You're being really hard on me, you know, like, so getting that feedback was like, whoa, I didn't even realize I was doing it, because I was so in my shame and I was trying to mask it with all those things, all these defenses. And I remember the first time it clicked, I cried all night. I had dreams. I just had nightmares, because I think being willing to recognize how we're showing up in hurtful ways, of course, it's going to bring up some sadness, some anxiety, some pain. It doesn't feel good to know that we're hurting our partner. And yet, if we don't give ourselves permission to feel, you know, guilt for how we are affecting the person that we're claiming to care about, what are we doing? You know, what are we modeling for humanity? I would say even further in the relationship, if we're not. And how attracted are we to people that can own their mistakes? You know, rather than somebody that is just always, I never do anything wrong. And I never make a mistake. That person, it's like your body just wants to clench up around somebody like that.
Yeah, you're feeling, stressed out the whole day. And I also feel like it plays a huge part individually, not necessarily in relationships, like goal setting and going, getting those things that we want for ourselves. When we're so afraid, like, for example, the fear of failure or whatever, criticism, like all of these fears that we have, the moment that you can see yourself as human and understand that everybody else is as human as you, and that failing or criticism or whatever happens, whatever fear you have, doesn't mean you're not enough, doesn't mean that you're a failure. Like, changing that language in ourselves really opens up to possibilities, which we see that all the time with clients.
I love that you brought the distinction outside of the relationship, because it's not just it's not in a relational way. It's like you said, it's, I have a dream or a goal to do in this lifetime. And if I'm so afraid of feeling shame or being criticized and getting negative feedback, I'm going to stop myself from taking these kind of risks. I'm going to stop myself from putting myself out there, because I can already anticipate that feedback is inevitable. Of course there's going to be feedback. I mean, anyone that's on social media that has, you know, people eyeballs on them, which is all of us, there is criticism, you know? And so I love that you're talking about it on a scale of also our self stepping into our own potential and how important being able to regulate that shame is for that.
Yeah. And Brené Brown always talks about that every time she talks in public, she literally saves a seat to the critics. Mm. And yeah. And I feel I do that. Like that's something that helped me a lot to show up here in social media. Mm. Like I started this account and for me it was like, okay, I'm gonna save this seat or comment section or whatever to the people that are not gonna agree with my content. Mm. Mm. Or the haters, however you want to call it. But and also
the confused admirers. I like to say haters are confused admirers.
Exactly. Or any fear that I have, like I always try to open up to them and understand that if they happened, it's okay and it's part of the process. And I think that's a huge distinction with shame, because that shame of not being good enough, it's what prevents us to even starting a project or speaking in public or starting a relationship or whatever it is that you, any project that you have in the future, whatever it is, the moment we understand that we're humans and these fears, yes, they can happen. And if they happen, it's fine. You get back up. That's a huge, huge thing to understand and to welcome into your life.
I love that. I love that. I wanted to offer a tool also for people that are perhaps in a relationship, if they are with someone, and let's say you're giving your partner feedback about something, or a friend. It doesn't have to be an intimate relationship. It could be a friend. You've maybe shared something that's been hurtful for you, or, you know, you said this hurt my feelings, or you've just given feedback that's about you. And if you're with somebody that gets defensive, like you said, you know, in the beginning, Stephanie, or deflects or gets really, really angry, those are all kind of ways to know that this person might be going through a shame experience. And so rather than, you know, taking it personally, let them kind of have their moment and recognize that, okay, they might need a little bit of comfort. But because I know for me, what would happen when somebody would do that sometimes, I would get very confused and then I would forget about what I was upset about. And I never got repaired. So I think it's like, yes, it's going back to the person after they've calmed and bringing up the topic again. Hey, I noticed that thing I brought up was really hard for you to be with. I really get that. Let me know if there's a certain way I can approach you, but I want you to know that it's okay for you to make mistakes here. Like, it's more than okay. You are, if anything, you being able to recognize when you do something hurtful makes me more drawn to you, makes me more attracted to you, makes me feel closer to you. So it's really, if we want to be able to help somebody that's having a shame experience, I think it's also important to recognize how to deal with that kind of experience. Yes. You know what I mean? Yes.
I love that you brought this subject up.
Yay.
I really do, because we're only talking about our shame, and this is a whole other theme, is acknowledging when somebody's having a shame experience. And I do this all the time with clients, whoever I encounter in my journey. When I see that somebody, I don't know, took something that I said or whatever it is in a defensive mode, is just saying, what's going on? Like, help me understand what's going on with you. Like, I apologize if I did something that triggered something in you, and I want to understand more. Tell me what's going on. And just being able to just listen and be curious, it's huge. Like, curiosity is everything. If you're able to step out of your zone, because you can also get defensive. When people get defensive with you, it triggers us, and we get defensive back. So if we're able to step out of our defensiveness and say, okay, wait, let's be curious, what's going on?
I love that. I love that because it's, but that takes a lot of you have to be kind of a pretty solid self-regulated person to be able to go from sharing your own upset and now this person has stole the show. And not only do you not get to be heard, you have to kind of be like, okay, let me just pause myself for a few moments because this person's reaction is a little bit bigger than mine in this moment. Which it is. Shame is, like I said, when I work with couples, the person experiencing the shame has to be the one that's responded to first because they're not going to be able to be present for you. So like you said, to be able to be with them and kind of help them come back. Otherwise, we don't have an audience. We don't have any, nobody's going to be listening. We're just going to be talking to a defensive person that's not going to be able to take in anything that we're even saying. And I think that's really, really helpful. And it's also important to know that, you know, one thing my therapist said that was so helpful, I don't know how deep the research goes with this, but she said that shame takes about 25 times to regulate. So if we didn't have it regulated well as children, let's say, you know, in my own relationship, I remember looking at my partner after learning this. I was like, honey, it's only going to take about 23 more times of me having these little explosive moments and then we'll be fine. But it was really helpful, you know, because I think it's just a reminder that when we have repetition enough times, it really, when somebody outside of us is comforting us and helping to soothe us, then we learn to regulate ourselves. But we need somebody from the outside to help us with that.
I love what you just said. And I never share about my relationship here, but you just shared something. I'll share a little experience of mine. Before getting married, I told my husband, I just want you to know that once a month I turn into a psycho. Something like that, I said. Once a month.
That's not bad at all compared to me. I get it.
And I told him like clearly what he had to do. So when I get this triggering moments, I need you to just reassure me that it's okay, that you're going to give me space, and that when I want to have a hug, just let you know, and you'll come back. Literally, like, and I had to tell him this when I was okay. You know, I cannot tell him that when I'm in the middle of a trigger. So something that I always tell my clients to talk about with their husbands is we tend that after a triggering event, after a discussion, we just don't even want to talk about it. We tend to just like wait until the next explosion and not talk about it at all. And I think that the most important conversations is when we're not in that triggering space, when we're not in the emotional state, when we're okay, when everything's fine. Okay, how can we talk, have a conversation right now of what happened and what would make a great repair the next time something like that happens? Like how can we work together as a team to make sure that whenever this happens, because this is going to continue to happen, if we're going to live together for the rest of our lives, you're going to have triggers, I'm going to have triggers. So let's talk about it. What makes you calm down? What makes me calm down? How can we work with each other in those moments so it doesn't turn into, I don't know, craziness?
Yes.
So those moments when you're regulated, those moments when you're okay, those are the moments to talk about the difficult themes. And very few people take advantage of those moments.
I love that. It's almost like we have the process, and if we don't talk about it, it doesn't get integrated. So it just kind of stays like this unresolved, lingering thing that, like you said, it just can show up exactly the same way the next time. Whereas when you talk about it, you can make suggestions. Hey, can you approach me like this instead? Or I realized when you did this, this really helped. But that actually didn't work so well. So maybe don't do that, you know?
Yeah.
Or recognizing that there's absolutely certain responses that we can hear from our partner that can actually trigger our shame even more. So for example, hi, Alexandra. Alexandra is here. Love her.
I know.
So
if
we're in a shame experience, we need our partner to be able to validate that that's hurtful. How, you know, saying things like, this is really hard, I really get how difficult this is, rather than trying to minimize the experience, which can actually trigger our defense from coming up even more. So it's really, you know, just helpful to recognize, just from an education standpoint, what's helpful, what's not helpful, and then not being afraid to tell exactly what we need to our partner. I mean, I'm sure you get it when you work with clients, how many people, you know, are like, but I don't want to tell my partner, you know, how to do this, or I don't want to feed them the words. But sometimes we have such different ways of approaching repair that we need to be able to explain exactly how we need to be approached.
Yeah, we're talking shame spirals.
We sure are.
Yes, we are.
We need you to join us in this conversation,
yes,
Alexandra.
So sad that we're going to do a threesome.
We're gonna figure out how to do a three-way and bring you on next time.
Yes, I agree. There's a lot about not wanting to tell our partners what we need and what we don't need, because we expect them to know for themselves. But the truth is, and a lot of times people don't realize it, we know it because we're therapists and we see a lot of clients on a daily basis, and we understand that every family is a whole world. Mm. Like, literally, even if you come to me for the same exact issue, infidelity, each of you are 100% different, and our job is to join your world, that like what's going on, to be 100% curious. Mm-hmm. And when we're not therapists or coaches, and when we don't do this kind of work, we can get into that thinking trap that every family is like my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, everybody knows what I know, and everybody knows like the rules that we have in our family, because these are basic rules. And they don't understand that each person have their own upbringing, their own values, their own trigger words, rules, etc.
Yeah, and different things that trigger their shame. You know, so
yes.
One partner for me, like, if you humiliate me publicly, I'm gonna hide into a hole. You know, like that public, you know, experience, because that's something, you know, as a performer child, I had to really kind of. I was a really sensitive kid, so performing in public ways, even though I did it, I was like a walking shame. I was like just so uncomfortable in my body. And so if I'm being forced to do something when I'm not really ready, that could trigger shame. But if I don't tell my partner this, he's doomed. You know, if I don't take that risk to share, and if he's not willing to really hear that and continue to kind of do that. So it's knowing the shame reaction is going to happen, but it's also, you know, giving our partner or friend or whoever we're close with that information that, hey, these are deep core vulnerabilities for me, that, yes, I'm working on my shame. I'm working on, you know, regulating this, and I'm doing my part here. But, and though, I really, really need your sensitivity around this. We don't want to just throw somebody in a situation and just be like, all right, time to deal with the shame now, when we don't work through it. No, that's going to traumatize us. So this is another layer that just kind of came to me as you were sharing that piece about, yes, we want to work through it. We're responsible for, you know, asking for support, but also giving the directions and the mapping of what are some of the things that might be destructive to help us work through that shame.
Yes. Yeah. And also talking about, and obviously that's a more deep vulnerability process, but I think it's so important to talk about our upbringing with our partners.
Yeah.
I think it's so important. And a lot of times we don't, because this whole idea of family secrets that we're fit into when we're little, and for a lot of us, it's very hurtful to talk about it. A lot of us just want to bury it.
Yeah.
Deep down and not talk about it ever again. And it's so important to talk about it, to be able to understand each other.
Yeah, and to give context why you're having such a huge blow up. What did I do? Well, this reminds me of this thing. And then your partner can relax. Ah, okay, I get why you're acting like
that. And empathize. Because in relationships, we 100% need empathy from our partners.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anything we should add? Any questions?
Well, I know that we talked a lot about the shame. I think, you know, really the driver is the bridge to healthy guilt is really number one, like you've been saying, is that ownership of the shame and the ability to take responsibility, to own even a small part of your role in something, to remember how attractive it is when we're humble and can own our mistakes. But really, without that, it's going to be really hard to empathize with. It's almost like we have to empathize with ourselves, and then we can really empathize with the other person.
Yeah. And in order to empathize with ourselves, we have to be very aware of the language that we're using inside. Mm-hmm. I always say that in order to do all this work, we have to be mindful. Without mindfulness in our lives, we cannot be aware of what's going on here.
Yeah.
We're not aware. It's just happening. Yeah. You know, we have thoughts, and the thoughts trigger emotions, and the emotions trigger urges, and then we go straight to the action. If we're not mindful, if we're not practicing mindfulness in our everyday, we cannot access our thoughts. Mm-hmm. And it's so important to be able to separate from them and see them and understand that those thoughts are not necessarily facts, you know? So let's take an example. You invited your friend to the party. That's a fact. And you reminded your friend that the party was at 8. That's a fact. Mm. Your friend responded, "I'll be there at 8. That's a fact. Your friend arrived at 10. That's a fact. Mm. Your friend arrived at 10 because he doesn't love you and you're not enough. That's a thought. That's not a fact. That's an interpretation of all the facts. So to be able to access the thoughts that are not facts, that are just thoughts, and separate from them and see them and be able to question them and say, no, this is all coming from my childhood. I always thought that somehow I wasn't enough and I didn't have many friends and people didn't come to my party and blah, blah, blah. And just be curious. Hey, I thought you were going to come at 8. What happened? Oh my God, I got into an accident. Or whatever. Mm. I was speaking to my mom. I was having a huge argument on the phone. I was actually in the parking lot for 2 hours. Oh, okay. But if you just take that thought of you not being good enough and you not being loved by this person and just take it as a fact, you're not even going to question it. And then the party's going to be over. Your friend's going to go back to their house and you're going to be super sad that night. And that thought that you thought it was a fact is going to stay with you. And it's just going to be another thing, whatever you want to call it, to the mountain of shame that you have here, that it's probably all based on thoughts that you thought were facts, or on comments from people in your life or experiences that made you believe that you weren't enough. But if you don't question it, you're never going to understand that you are enough.
I feel like I just got my own therapy session right now. That was really, really powerful. I resonate a lot with cognitive breakdown. So what you just did, like breaking down how to actually question the thoughts, works really well for me, you know, because it's really easy when we're more really highly emotional to not be able to make sense of what's going on. So that process of questioning is so helpful. Like it was an explosion of hearts that just happened.
Yes, thank you. Absolutely. And you know that when you research mindfulness, you always get the be able to see your thoughts as clouds. Mm. And I love that. And that was what I used to do. And then I did a workshop here and I asked the people in the audience to come up with their own metaphor. Like, it doesn't have to be clouds. Like, how do you want to see your thoughts? And one of them was a social media expert. And he said, you know what? I'm going to see my thoughts as Facebook ads. Hmm. Facebook ads. I thought that was brilliant.
That's really interesting.
So when Facebook ad come on, which, you know, the computer has cookies, mm-hmm. and they know what you're interested in. So you're talking about a dentist and then you suddenly see in Facebook that they're recommending a dentist. Like, it's super creepy.
I know.
But it's really like, it's literally like that. Like, you go to a party, you hear that this person was cheated on, and then your husband tells you that he's going to a trip and you're like, oh my God, he's going to cheat on me. It's like a Facebook ad. But you can choose. if you click on the ad or if you don't. Mm-hmm. It is your choice if you click on the Facebook ad and like buy the stuff, or if you just see it there, and you can even click like eliminate if you want, but you don't have to.
I love that.
But I feel like for me, that analogy was like, wow, come here and do the talk. I'll sit down.
It's amazing. And I love that. And I think also, you know, giving ourselves permission sometimes that we don't even realize that we bought into it until it's already too late. You know, sometimes we have to go through the blaming, the criticizing, the, like you said, sometimes we get hooked, but to have that awareness then to come back to like, oh shit, was that really true? What happened there? You know, why was I so hard on my partner? Or is there actually evidence to prove what I'm thinking? You know, and for me, that's been like I have to be really logical when I'm in that emotional state. And then again, but if you're stuck in shame, you're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to apologize for this way that I behaved? So again, it goes back to really being able to hold a space for being okay with making mistakes and calling yourself out and being able to tolerate that sense of guilt, you know? And I think, you know, there's a flip side to all of this where there can be a toxic guilt as well. I don't know if we're going to probably have time to go into that conversation, but that's
another
like
life.
Another life, you know? I think it'll be a little bit, I think it'll be too much nerd out.
But yeah, 100%. Yeah, what you just said, the being able to tolerate that guilt and rephrasing what's on our mind. So instead of saying, oh my God, I'm so stupid, I'm so bad that I did this and I forgot completely to whatever it is. And you did, I'm human and I made this mistake and it's okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to repair it and just move on. Like, it doesn't have to stay there.
And how the person we're in relationship responds is also so important. I think, you know, because we can be so remorseful and own our mistake, but we can be with somebody that has their own unresolved stuff that they haven't worked through. Maybe they have anger or deep pain with a parent, and if they want to unload and use this as an opportunity to just berate or use contempt or be very hurtful, they can try to punish us. So it's recognizing, okay, did I apologize? Did I do my part? Is this person still kind of beating me up about this here? Or are they really? Because that's it's like
this is huge. To Sylvie, because I feel like so many of you and people in general, like, they do their work.
Yes.
They do their work, but then they're tangled into this relationship where the other person is not doing their work.
Not
being helpful. And they're actually being more destructive than helpful, and they're affecting our well-being. And I think it's so important what you just said. I'm so glad you said it before we...
And it's hard to recognize.
Because it's so critical.
Yeah. It can be hard to recognize, especially if we struggle with boundaries or if we've been enmeshed with a parent. Sometimes, again, it's being able to, the logic. This is where the logical side is really important. That's why I love that you're working with the cognitive stuff. It's checking, you know, okay, have I apologized? Have I shown remorse? Maybe they're still hurt with me. That's okay. They're allowed to be hurt. They're allowed to be upset. But how are they acting with? Are they being punishing? Are they being cruel? Are they being unkind? Are they now shaming me for making a mistake? And then so we learn to start setting boundaries. Hey, you know, I've realized I've apologized about this thing. You're welcome to still be upset. You know, you could take your time, however much you need to be hurt, but this is not okay. You are not allowed to treat me like this for making a mistake. And then paying attention. Does this person respond to the boundary? Are they willing to kind of catch themselves or bring that awareness into the way they're showing up? Because otherwise we're going to take way too much responsibility for the other side, which again, that's where the boundaries get merged. And maybe this is also another live conversation.
Yeah, people are going crazy in the comments. Yeah. Yes, this is huge. Please save this. We're going to save this.
Yay.
We're going to save this. And I decided I'm going to start recording every live that I do, and I'm going to create a podcast. Woo-hoo. Only for the recordings of the lives, because this is such an important information, and it needs to be saved.
Yeah.
Any suggestion that they have to tell me when my father stops shaming me? Yeah. this is a whole other topic. Everybody that's making a lot of questions that are specifically to you guys, we have like 5 minutes left of, of the live, and then it just cuts off. So if I want to engage in those really important themes, like I would love to, but it's not going to be able to be in this live. I'm sorry. But I'm so glad you all joined. I'm so glad Sylvie accepted to do this live with me. It was
so exciting.
So such an important conversation. We touched very important topics, and I really, really hope that you all could get value out of it.
Yeah, lots of compassion and empathy for your moments of shame, because it can be such a challenging emotion to be with. And please don't be afraid to reach out to support a therapist, a guide, a coach, somebody outside of you to help you start regulating this emotion. Because look, two people in the healing field, and we're telling you we've both struggled with it. So support is necessary.
And whoever tells you they haven't, they're lying.
They're lying.
The only human being that doesn't feel negative feelings, including shame, it's literally psychopaths. Like, literally, that's the research. Psychopaths and dead people. Like, the rest, we all feel all types of negative emotions.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. And this is going to be saved for 24 hours. Again, I'm going to do a podcast and I'm going to upload the audio there. If you have any more questions, I'm definitely going to touch upon this theme in my posts. And Sylvie has a lot of information there also. But if you have more questions and suggestions about themes that we can touch upon, please, please DM us. We're going to do everything possible.
I'll put my name because it's spelled a little bit off, but that's okay. That's okay. Don't worry about it. I'm putting it there just in case you guys want to find me. But I think they could just click on the. Perfect. Thank you so much, Stephanie. Perfect. I'm so honored to be here and such an enjoyable conversation.
Me
I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you,
love.
Well, me too. Thank you so much.
Bye,
loved mama. All of your insights.
Oh, thank you, love. Sending everyone so much love.
Night.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.